教えした로하타제비오텐데시타유두체체아니지강토도아니세보고해로하이라세보시차도같이어떤데시중재아니제시고대박이야로하제시고대박텐데제고에기치보래텐데제바이나은슴등도빠져샤해어디제바시모임해
Okay, so as much as possible, let's try to visualize and bring to mind the objects of refuge. So as much as possible, try to do that clearly in your mind, and then develop and try to generate single-pointed faith towards them. So this is important.
Yeah. 사과도아니지아니되지심지기편의로서바틴데삼체아니지다틴데기대화를제수이랑치에바틴데치투나양고소는럽시모사투에바틴데레
Then try to recollect the qualities of the Buddha's exalted body, exalted speech and exalted mind. Then you can also recollect the benefits of generating bodhicitta, you know? And then I can rejoice in it, and you rejoice in those virtues. Yeah? So if we can do that, then we will accumulate a lot of merit.
What did you say? I need help to start Sanjay Sung, so to do Sanjay Sung Rap Tinsula. I need one that's also looking there's Chavanjang, that Sanjay Sung, the Shenda Mandoy. One is a Junsenda Demaiba. I need to require you today. Today is Tong Tuaina.아니산지숨락진조그런게대사반상진조라도뭐는휴자부르셨으니산지숨아대바치
And because all of you have already done some study of the Buddha's teachings, so with whatever understanding you have, perhaps you may now be able to see, you know, how the Buddha's teachings it is in a different league. Yeah, it's really you know, different from others, and that the Buddha's teachings makes sense, and it is logical. Yeah. So by seeing these characteristics of the Buddha's teachings, then again, then develop this faith. Yeah.
What is that? That's the Sanje Sungrabla Sungma Nashing. The only Chimatwa Le Mandu Shenko Jutsen Yede Bashi.먼저통틀어지를원해실업자상보인것이다라는지도나모든것을가가를지직산지송대만지인도가나원해삼지미자것이달업자상보지되어것이균세다내부유대신먼저시틀어지인바래다
So of course without talking about whether we are able to put all the Buddhist teachings into practice or not, but if we just examine the Buddhist teachings on its own, if we just look at it, you know,We can see that, you know, it is something that is that really stands out, something very different, something that accords with common sense and also reason. Yeah. You can see it is actually very it's basically something very good. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Without talking about, you know, whether we can put it into practice or not. Yeah.
어떻게딱던다딱진대시안이시라면통도가좋나산지그송세비스다저산지랍샤드에서산지랍샤드때문에상보이마시도아니균세다때문에통도나아대답을지다오늘심지를되게중요하게된쇼도좋아차비요하래대상진대기안산지기때문에유능도나지마르고수와진대기치도나도섬치기위해서와진대기안지대바다아니지둠바슈타고진대의중요한이냥
So if you can see how wonderful the Buddha's teachings are, you know, how you know, these teachings are really very good and they make sense, you know, they're very logical, you know, then just by seeing this, we can see how you know, these instructions are the source of happiness, you know, and peace for others as well. You know? And then if we see this, you know, then one can... You know, have this wish, you know, generate some wish for the Buddha's teachings, you know, to endure for a long time, to be preserved and to spread, yeah, in order to achieve happiness for others, yeah. And with this also one can also see from one's own side how important it is also to learn the teachings ourselves. So in order to study, in order to be able to learn the Buddha's teachings, first we must have an aspiration for it. We must want to do it. Yeah. And in order to want to learn the Buddha's teachings, we first have to understand how amazing the Buddha's teachings are, how inconceivable they are. Once we see how wonderful the Buddha's teachings are, then we will have the aspiration to learn it.
Yeah.
So therefore, by thinking about these points, try to develop this faith in Buddhist teachings and a strong aspiration to want to learn it. Yeah. Okay, so think about this, and so the whole point is to develop this strong intention to want to listen to the teachings, to learn the teachings, and to study them. Yeah. So we can think about this for the next couple of minutes. Yeah. Obeyance to my Guru and Protector, Manjushri, who holds to his heart the spiritual text, symbolic of seeing all things as they are, whose understanding shines forth as the sun, unclouded by defilements, all traces of ignorance, who teaches in 60 ways with the patient love of a father for his only son, all creatures caught in the prison of samsara, confused by the darkness of the ignorance, overwhelmed by the suffering, he whose dragon thunder proclamation of the Dharma arouses us in the stupor of our delusions and frees us from the iron chains of our. His powerful sword of wisdom hews down suffering wherever its sprouts appear, clearing away the darkness of all ignorance. I entreat you, O Manjushri, whose princely body is adorned with 112 marks of a Buddha, who has completed the 10 stages, achieving the highest perfection of a Bodhisattva, who has been pure from the beginning. O Manjushri, O loving one, with the brilliance of your wisdom, illuminate the darkness enclosing our minds, illuminate the intelligence and wisdom, so we may gain insight into Buddhist words and texts that explain Omaravatana Deyamara. Okay, we have any questions? You can raise it up now. Maybe just one question.
Clarify about this
your question is in the back.
remembering the generating the aspirational when you start six times a day being an uncommon precept. Maybe just explain a bit uncommon with respect to what? Is it with respect to engaging bodhicitta or with respect to aspiring bodhicitta without commitment?
Tanda chidong sumante tirwa ta mesin ta mesin tamja chingi ta zo ti sungwa rwa taki ta jambu len sung ta len tuk semke len tuk kiwa ki zo zo mesin tamja chingi lapsha sungwa rwa ki tumo mani bare sidi peche ta chanchi ta juk semdang tumo mare sigi yukiri peche ti meno papa mishi peche ti ingiri ta ko messing with two mama in his stuff. The jokes are not in the Kokoman Syrian machine.
Training in the precept to generate the spirit of enlightenment, bodhicitta, for six times a day is said to be an uncommon precept. To be adopted after one has generated the aspirational spirit of enlightenment that comes with a pledge or commitment, isn't it? Yeah. It is uncommon, unshared, perhaps it is uncommon or unshared with the engaged spirit of enlightenment, but I'm not sure.
So, must be like that, I'm not sure. What in the shop? A shambaka and do mix it up to the colors. What to shin, shambaka and do cousin sugar machine. I mean, Napo Chushi, Kabu Chushi, say there, that to not never chip away. What is it? Never chip your head, no.
So we were talking about the four black dharmas and the four white dharmas, right? So these training to abandon the four black dharmas and to cultivate the four white dharmas is the point is that they prevent whatever the spirit of enlightenment that one has generated from degenerating, right?
What to say? Dinane, that is the Chiwa, that the Chiwas, then a carbo chu shiba, the Casino, Rangi membership, Simjendi, and Zobe Chanjula, Super Chipgres, Carbo chu shiba Tirwa, but Nelson Tamjas Sonsane, that Rangi Simjin Shintendo.
So, after one has adopted the aspirational spirit of enlightenment with a pledge, like the one that comes with a commitment, we have to train in the four white dharmas, isn't it? And the fourth white dharma is, maturing ripening the mind streams of sentient beings, right? Through connecting them to the Mahayana. The point essentially is to do something to cause them to develop the spirit of enlightenment, isn't it? Isn't it?
다 아니 바로 소속 갈래 잡채티니 아니 바로 비교다 아니 전주의 쌤 맞잖아 아니 가르치겠다.
So the question is, if you try, but they fail, they don't generate the spirit of enlightenment, then how?
아니 나쁜 소리 말해.
Then is it a black dharma or not?
Yeah, we stand and explain. Yeah.
So the question is for everyone, right? So if you say no, but then you have to know why. Do you have a reason for saying no?
Because it says here in the text that if you, from your side, you try your very best to bring a sentient being to the path, but from their side, it doesn't happen. Yeah, it says here it does not become a mistake just because you were unable to accomplish it. So it sounds like what is the key thing here is to always have the thought of trying to work for that. It says here in this 163.
균전 가르렸어. 심지어 신인들 마주가 있는 야반 미중화 가르렸어. 균전.
So what's the reason? What's the reason for not incurring a fault if the sentient beings do not enter into the Mahayana despite your efforts? What's the reason for not incurring a fault?
It seems to me the reason for not incurring the fault is because the motivation is positive and virtuous.
So if I say that, it doesn't matter what the motivation is. The point is, one has failed. Yeah, one has failed to achieve the goal. Yeah. So if let's say, if this was said to you,
one will try again. Yeah, maybe it didn't work with sentient being A, but it could work with sentient being
B. So it's a fault,
B.
Is it? So it's a fault, isn't it?
If that is a fault...
I'm just arguing, don't believe what I'm saying.
I know,
saying,
yeah? I understand that. I know, Karen Buche, but if that is a fault, then it will be very difficult to practice at all, because when we're trying to practice... when we are trying to practice, we will make many mistakes. You know, but I think the thing is to work on the motivation and keep on trying.
We will make many mistakes, yeah?
Yeah.
We will incur many faults, right? Oh.
Oh, I stepped into that one.
So if you are unable to mature, help the ones that you're supposed to mature, then is it a fault or not? Let's see, your customer base, no?
Sorry, I wasn't paying attention. I apologize. Yes.
Please pay attention.
Yes. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry.
If you are not able to mature those you are helping to mature, then is it a fault?
It
yes
is not,
no,
a fault.
No, first you say whether yes, you don't know. Then after that, explain why. Yeah.
I think in this context...
No, first you say yes or no.
Oh, okay.
Okay. No. After you said no, explain the reason why.
Okay. Because I think in this context, this white dharma of trying to ripen sentient beings in the text is explained to be an antidote to the second black dharma, which is making people regret the virtuous actions they have done. So in that context, thinking that this is an antidote, when you're trying to ripen sentient beings, you are actually trying not to make them regret generating virtue, but you are actually trying your very best to encourage them to do virtue. And that is why, even though sometimes you may fail from maybe your lack of skill, your skill or your wisdom, you know, with helping this person properly, it is still not a fault.
What if they regret meeting the Mahayana?
I guess we can only do so much, right? Because after a certain point, it's up to the other side, yeah? I mean, we can just do our best from our side. But I think in this context, because the second paragraph in the text then actually highlights that it's the antidote.
That means not our problem.
No, I'm not saying it's not our problem. I'm saying...
Our problem, our fault. Totally entire other person or your fault?
It's shared
responsibility.
It's not a fault in terms of transgressing the commitment, because here you're talking about aspirational bodhicitta with the commitment, right, of avoiding the four black dharmas and keeping the trying to observe the four white dharmas, but in the sense of our personal capabilities, then certainly perhaps it's our lack of skill in guiding this person. But I think in the context of the commitment, it is not a fault, but if we are saying on our personal level, is it a fault because of our lack of skillful means or our capability, then yes, it is a fault.
So in general, it's a fault. But how in this case is it not a fault? And of course, from the perspective of someone who has generated the aspirational spirit of enlightenment that comes with a commitment or pledge, isn't it, to never give it up? Yeah.
Is there a question?
Yeah. So how does it not become a fault? No? If the other party doesn't respond and say, doesn't succeed?
Because of the underlying aspiration, the underlying motivation. Because this is in the context of aspirational bodhicitta with the commitment. If the other party doesn't respond, but from your side you had a positive motivation and keeping in mind that this is an antidote to the second black dharma, it is not a fault because from your side you are trying to encourage, you know. So I think that this clarification by the text is very encouraging, you know, that you try, but if the other person doesn't respond, you don't. But it means I think it is also not a fault. Because if it was a fault, then, you know, we would be so discouraged, we wouldn't try anymore. If one sentient being, we can't ripen that sentient being and we give up and it's a fault, you know, then we wouldn't try anymore, you know? I mean, yeah, that's what I was thinking. We would be completely disheartened and discouraged because every time when we try to help a sentient being who doesn't respond, it is a fault. It becomes like negative. It's a negativity. So it becomes negativity, then we end up not wanting to help any sentient being.
Which is also a fault.
Which is not easy. Yeah.
Fault line.
Okay, dear Sha. Or Chilan did it, Taras Chiway, Vincent, the Lenchilan Pesaman, the Lenjapua Pesaman, Sebush, the Lenjapua, the lawyer, or the Dash, the Chuachiwa, she never came to.
So, anyway, the answer is in the text. Yeah. That was just to do some market research. Yeah. Whether the text was read or not.
Anybody read the section, the coming one? Huh? Good. Huh? Yeah, if you don't read, it's complicated. If I explain now, it will be complicated. Yeah? Yeah. If you read before, then maybe you'll understand. If you didn't read, then I think now. More difficult. So, what to say? That's on the new book. So, that's on the new book. So, that's on the new book. Tapshin is Sanko Gress. The new book is Sungu Yare. Tapshin. Reregi, Sanji, Dupto Yamares. That's all new book. Dinama, that's all those my things.
So, the following sections in the text. Basically, it's talking about the need to bring together both method and wisdom in order to achieve Buddhahood, in order to achieve full enlightenment. Yeah. Practicing method alone or wisdom alone will not lead anyone to Buddhahood.
That is some of Tango Kishimore, that Sanjay Gobon Tobala, Tapsin Karsin Gubiris. The Sheriff Jambe Sanjay Gobon Dumitova Karere, Tap Jambe Sanjay Gobon Dumitova Karere, so till some of the anybody.
So, this is something that is, this is something that we really need to think about. It's very important here. So, we need to understand why, in order to achieve Buddhahood, we need both method and wisdom. So we need to be able to tell ourselves, you know, why Buddhahood cannot be achieved just by cultivating wisdom alone. We also need to know why it is not that why Buddhahood cannot be achieved by practicing method alone. So the end result of reading this section, you know, is to the end result should be the answer to these questions. So the protector Nagarjuna, in his composition called The Precious Garland, said that the Buddha's embodiment of form, or the rupakaya, or form body, arises through the collection of merit. The Buddha's embodiment of truth, or the truth body, Dharmakaya, arises from the collection of wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what Nagarjuna said, right, in the Precious Garden, right? So do we need to give much thought to this? You know? We need to think about this deeply. You know? How does the accumulation of merit result in achieving the Buddha's form body? And how does the collection of wisdom result in the achievement of the Buddha's truth body? And in this following section, the essence, the answer, the essential answer is this: in order to achieve full enlightenment, you need a path that unifies method and wisdom. So there is the wrong assertion or the claims that any kind of thought, either virtuous or non-virtuous, any kind of thought is an obstacle to achieving enlightenment. The path to enlightenment does not involve conceptuality, does not involve thinking. Yeah, the people who hold on to these views also believe that the practice of generosity, ethics, and so forth are also obstacles, hindrances to achieving the path. So the proponents of this view basically assert that, you know, in order to achieve full enlightenment, you know, you do not need to practice the six perfections. In fact, there are hindrances. Yeah, in order to achieve full enlightenment, according to these people, all you need to do is to settle your mind, you know, in a state that lacks any kind of thought, you know, basically space out, you know, not thinking anything. And then that itself is like, ooh, the path to enlightenment. So Nevertheless, there are still some who continue to think in this way. Some belittle the deeds that are part of the path, the vows which are to be kept, and the like, rejecting them and so forth when they cultivate the path. Others do not accept Harshan's mistaken denial of the factor of method, but assert that his way of understanding the philosophical view is excellent. And still others cast aside discerning wisdom and claim that Harshan's meditation of not thinking is best. The path of these persons is indeed not at all in the direction or vicinity of a meditation on emptiness. But even if you were to allow that it is a meditation on emptiness, you would not then go on to say that those with the knowledge that comes from their cultivation of a faultless method of meditation, after they have found the mistaken meaning, the unmistaken meaning of emptiness, should meditate on emptiness alone. And not cultivate conventional states of mind pertaining to deeds. Firstly, emptiness is not nothingness. You know, emptiness is doesn't mean, you know, just like, you know, kong. Nothingness of all means, you know. And even if one does meditate on emptiness, but yet one rejects the need to meditate on the conventional aspects of the path, that also becomes a mistake. Even if one meditates on emptiness, but if one asserts that, you know, there is no need to cultivate the method as the method side of the path, yeah, then that is wrong, yeah. Because the text says, to say such things contradict all the scriptures and completely flies in the face of reason. So to assert that, you know, there's no need to practice method, you know, you can practice wisdom, but there's no need to practice method. If you say this contradicts scriptural authority, and also it defies logic.
Then the Lamrim Dang, Yashiva Lam Dang, Sonam Tso, 当特别吃些把那么就过个吃多，所以大家今天有讨论这边。
How does this fly in the face of reason? The goal for practitioners of the Mahayana is a non-abiding nirvana. For this, you have to achieve non-abiding in cyclic existence via the wisdom that knows reality. The stages of the path contingent on the ultimate, the profound path, the collection of sublime wisdom, the so-called factor of wisdom. You also have to achieve a non-abiding in a peace that is nirvana via the wisdom that understands the diversity of phenomena, the stages of the path contingent on conventional truths, the vast path or the extensive path, the collection of merit, the so-called factor of method.
Ani tuan tambah latihan belam rim sen, tak sama lam di rimba sen, isi le cok sen, siapa bicara sen, tuan dah ini, tak latihan mana ada mata kuasa cepat aku siapa dia, betul.
So you have these different expressions here. The wisdom that knows reality, the stages of the path contingent on the ultimate.The profound path, the collection of sublime wisdom, the so-called factor of wisdom. These are all just different ways of saying the same thing. Yeah. All of these expressions here boil down to the same meaning.
Yeah.
Likewise, the expressions, the wisdom that understands the diversity of phenomena, the stages of the path contingent on conventional truths, the vast path, the collection of merit, the so-called factor of method, again, they all mean the same thing. So the point is that they when you look at these different expressions, looking at them together, they give you the same understanding. Yeah, this is what we mean by being similar. Here we are not talking about analyzing their limits of their pervasion. You know, when this is that or that is this, that kind of thing. No, we're just saying that.And all these different expressions, they all boil down the same thing. They're all trying to tell you the same thing. So the object of attainment of the main object of attainment or the goal of the bodhisattvas is the non-abiding nirvana. Your non-abiding nirvana is the great liberation, yeah, the great nirvana, yeah.And non-abiding nirvana here refers to not abiding in the two extremes. Okay, so non-abiding nirvana here refers to the great nirvana, and refers to not abiding in the two extremes. Yeah. Not abiding in the extreme of samsara.And not abiding in the extreme of the peace that is nirvana. What is it that enables someone to not abide in the extreme of samsara? It is the wisdom that knows reality. Without the wisdom that knows reality, one will not be able to avoid abiding in samsara.
어떻게니? 다 디네마 아니지 변하다. 양대를 믿네봐. 세기 조조 다 멤버 양대, 그러와. 다 이란 양대. 진짜 제대로 양대라. 아니 양대 톱체 다 가는 양대 지금 말했을까요, 그러와. 믿네버 쳐버리 가리게 쳐버리 탑이 쳐버리. 조조 다 조조 다 인제나 장주가 승기 다 탑이 쳐 조조 인제나 장주가 승기 쳐버렸어. 다 탑이 쳐 뒤 쳐버렸어.
And when one achieves enlightenment, one does not abide in the extreme of nirvana. One does not abide in nirvana. And nirvana here refers to the lower nirvana, the liberation that is achieved by the hearers and the solitary realizers. Yeah. Okay. So when one achieves enlightenment, what is it that enables one to not abide in nirvana? It is the factor of method. Here, primarily compassion and bodhicitta.
What to say? That to that, the Karasana, that many when young de, so many when young de, to be the Tapsi Niki to Kukaras. That Tapsi Ni Mabina, many when young de, said, to Kumaras. Said, many when young de, to Bala Tapsi Ni Kukaras, Tapsi Ni Mena, that many when young de, to Kumaras, and so that it pays that Mineba, said Tanya, Minebody.
So in order to achieve the non-abiding nirvana, you need to have both the factor of method and the factor of wisdom. Without the factors of method and wisdom, one will not be able to achieve the non-abiding nirvana. Yeah? Precisely because it is the factor of method and wisdom that allows one to not abide in either samsara or nirvana. Yeah, so this is true reason that you prove the need for both the factors of method and wisdom in order to achieve Buddhahood. Yeah. So next is a scriptural providing the scriptural source
here. 신부
So the source is in the sutra of showing the Tathagata's inconceivable secret. And this sutra says, the collection of sublime wisdom eliminates all afflictions. The collection of merit nurtures all living beings. Bhagavan, since this is the case, Mahasattva, Bodhisattvas, should strive for the collections of sublime wisdom and merit. The teaching of Vilama Vimalakirti states, what is bondage for the bodhisattvas and what is their liberation? Wisdom that is not imbued with method is bondage. Wisdom imbued with method is liberation. Method not imbued with wisdom is bondage. Method imbued with wisdom is a liberation. So the main point of this scripture, quoting this scripture here, is to highlight the need for both method and wisdom, yeah, in achieving enlightenment.
Yeah. Oh, 가야 고래기 롱독신 당시에 대하다 같은 고래 롱다지 공을 집발해.
Then also there's a quotation from the formals of Gaya, which is basically saying pretty much the same thing. Yeah, so the quotation from the formals of Gaya states that you need both method and wisdom in order to achieve enlightenment.
Yeah.
And the questions of Crest Jewel Sutra says that it is necessary to meditate on emptiness that has the supremacy of being associated with all the aspects. That is an emptiness that is complete in all the facets of method, generosity, and so forth.
What is that? Chiparsha, cinema. That cinema, that Shara Chipuyan, and Mijiga, that is Lunga Kai Mendota. Number top of Dubalejang, Chanju Saman Namji Chanju, Chintu Dubalas, Milumbota. Because Milumbota, Shishi Honala.
Then in the sutra gathering all the threats, it says, fools intending to repudiate the other perfections will speak thus about the bodhisattva's correct practice of the six perfections for the sake of perfect enlightenment. Bodhisattvas should train in perfect wisdom alone. The remaining perfections have no use. Fools will also say that enlightenment is only reached through a single way, the way of emptiness. Their deeds will be completely impure. So basically, this quotation here is to reject, you know, the view that, you know, meditating on the perfection of wisdom alone is sufficient to achieve enlightenment.
Yeah.
So anyway, there are these many scriptural citations, right? Quotations, yeah. And the point is to show, you know, that, you know, that it is incorrect to say that, you know, one can achieve enlightenment, you know, without bringing method and wisdom together.
Yeah.
Then the text here brings up another qualm. There are people who said that practicing the deeds of generosity and so forth in a variety of ways is for when you do not have a firm knowledge of emptiness. Okay, so that means before you have a firm knowledge of emptiness, then you have to mass up with all these things. You know? But after that, you know, once you have some stable understanding of emptiness, you know, then, you know, that alone is enough. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that is another view, yeah. And the reply to this is a very wrong view. Yeah. If it were correct, then the children of the conquerors who have ascended to the great levels, the great grounds, I think what we usually translate as ground, is translated as level in this text. Those, so the children of the conquerors who have ascended to the great levels where they have attained the non-conceptual sublime wisdom that perceives the ultimate truth, and in particular the eight level bodhisattvas who have control over non-conceptual wisdom, would not need the bodhisattva deeds. This is incorrect, because the sutra on the 10 levels says that even though on each of the 10 levels there is an emphasis on one of the deeds, generosity, etc., it is not the case that they do not perform the other deeds. So it is said that they practice all 6 or 10 perfections on each level, on each ground. So for those who have achieved the non-conceptual wisdom, directly perceiving emptiness, starting from the first level of the first bodhisattva ground, and even those on the eighth bodhisattva ground, those who have removed the afflictive obscurations, even for these bodhisattvas abiding on the levels on the grounds, they have to practice all 10 perfections. Of course, on each of the grounds, they emphasize a particular perfection. Yeah. But within that, they also practice all the 10 perfections on each of the levels, right? So in particular, those eight level, eight ground bodhisattvas, eight ground bodhisattvas have really eliminated the afflictive obscurations. Yeah, afflictive obscurations, which is usually translated as obstruction to liberation, right? So afflictive obscuration is more accurate. Yeah. They already achieve a very special kind of wisdom. Yeah. But with that special kind of wisdom alone, can they achieve enlightenment? The answer is no. Yeah. With that special wisdom alone, they can't achieve enlightenment. If we say that they can achieve enlightenment just by having that special wisdom alone, then that will entail the fallacy of the hearers and solitary realizers, four destroyers, achieving enlightenment also. So he said that the Buddhas exhort the eight ground bodhisattvas to arise from their meditative ego poison.
To talk.
So even these high-level bodhisattvas, you know, still need to train in a method as well, besides wisdom, yeah? And in fact, right from the beginning, one has to train in a path that brings together both method and wisdom, yeah? Even if one enters into the path of highest yoga tantra, one still needs to train in the factors of method, yeah, like the six perfections, yeah. So it is said in the tantric teachings as well. Of course, on the path of highest yoga tantra, one need not train in the six perfections for a very long period of time, such as over a period of three great countless eons, yeah. But nevertheless, one still has to train in the six perfections, even on the path of highest yoga tantra.
Yeah.
Having said all this, yeah, then the people who hold on to these views, no, now suddenly say, no, suddenly like WP and PAP like that, no. Suddenly I remember. No, so now they say, you know what they say, no? I'm not saying that generosity is not needed. But when you sustain, when you settle your mind in a kind of state, you know, that doesn't have any thought, the practice of generosity is complete within that practice.
Wow.
So they say that, you know, the practice of generosity, for example, is fully present in the state of mind that lacks any thought, you know. Because in that state, you know, there's an absence of grasping, you know, or apprehend. There's an absence of apprehending a giver, apprehending a gift, and apprehending a recipient. You know. So that makes, you know, what we call the non-apprehending generosity fully present. Wow, that's semantics, man. So they say it's the same for the remaining perfections, yeah. And they actually say that, you know, this is said in some of the sutras, yeah.
What do you think?
So of course this is incorrect, right? So the answer is given here, yeah. to basically to say that you know how can the practice of generosity be present when your mind is in a state that is basically spacing out, you
know?
So the reply to this is there in the text here. If they are fully present in a state of mind that lacks thought, then when non-Buddhist meditators are in meditative equipoise, even in single-pointed states of serenity, calm abiding, all the perfections would be fully present because they are also not adhering to a giver, give, and a recipient. Yeah, so these wrong assertions entail the fallacy of asserting that the practice of the perfection is also present in the minds of
non-Buddhists.
Then there also entails the fallacy that the perfections are also present in the minds of the hearers and solitary realizers who are in meditative equipoise, directly perceiving emptiness. Yeah, and if that's the case, then that entails the fallacy that they are Mahayanists. Anybody would like to explain the last very long sentence? So, this part which says, and if you assert that just one practice is sufficient because the sutra says that all six perfections are included in each, well then, since it also says all six are present even when offering a mandala while reciting the verse beginning. I don't remember any mandala verse that is giving cow dung to giving cow dung together with his water, it would be also enough to do only this. Anybody?
I don't know what this sentence trying to say here. I don't know.
Anybody who practices mandala was also practicing the six perfections.
What's the why the sentence come here? I don't know. Yeah, I don't see that. Religious there.
I think Cecilia likes to do mandala, so maybe you know.
Go. Have them come quick here. Yeah.
It's not about a cow dung, yeah? So, I have the qualm here. If that is the case, people, whether on the Hinayana path or even Mahayana Bodhisattvas performing the wisdom in meditative poise directly realizing emptiness, those wisdoms are not conjoined with the method for the six perfections. Is that
what? Can you repeat?
That the wisdom in meditating equipoise, directly realizing emptiness, only emptiness appear to that perspective. And I remember
talking who?
Even for
Arya Bodhisattvas?
Arya Bodhisattvas, okay.
Okay, then.
I also remember that Ken Rinpoche mentioned in the past, you know, those are a few lessons ago, that engaged spirit of enlightenment is not present at all. Only the aspirational spirit of enlightenment.
Yeah.
So does that mean that then that there will be an occasion whereby wisdom and method is not cultivated together? Would that mean that if during the perspective of the wisdom meditative poise directly cognizing emptiness,
yeah,
since it is not conjoined or even with the engaged spirit of enlightenment, not conjoined with any method?
Why you said that?
I'm just asking, confirming whether this is
it is conjoined with that.
Then how does that? How do I understand then that the engaged
that
spirit?
That one you have to say must conjoin with bodhicitta. That one we have to say. There's two type of bodhicitta. One is they have one, yeah.
The aspiring spirit of enlightenment.
Yeah, conjoin with that.
So that is method as well.
Of course.
But I'm made to understand that method and wisdom here in specific refers to the deeds, the six perfections.
Not necessary.
So the factor of method would include bodhicitta, the then mind generation, right? So the wisdom directly perceiving emptiness in the continuum of a bodhisattva is conjoined with the factor of method, one has to say. So when one debates, then you have to say it is conjoined with the factor of wisdom, but it is not directly conjoined with the factor of wisdom. Method is conjoined with the factor of method. The wisdom directly perceiving emptiness in the continuum of a bodhisattva, you have to say that wisdom is conjoined with the factor of method. But you do not say that it is directly conjoined with the factor of method.
What did she touch in the head? Or that Karasena, most of my symbols, most of Simba, you know, Karas, most of Simba, like Kandavosina, Simba, Sinsenica, Mundu, do you watch?
So it is not directly conjoined, because in order for it to be directly conjoined, the conjoined and the is there such thing as conjoined? That which conjoined and that which is conjoined must both be manifest.
Oh.
So, in meditating before, it's already focusing on emptiness. Only the wisdom is manifest, right? The bodhicitta is not manifest, right? So yeah, so this is how you make the difference between conjoined and directly conjoined. Simba.
So
So I think the text goes on to basically talk about the meaning of conjoined and yeah. I mean generally we translate as conjoined in the philosophy in the FPMD. At least I know in FPMD we say conjoined. But here in this text I guess they say seems like the word imbued is used, yeah.
Mikpe lot tenam tonyi topa miyang te shukdan tenpa chukpa mikalas tungo tabu chanchuwa sim shuk topa ngondong tangna tonyi ki tengen zinla shakwe se chanchuwa sim de ngosu mejang di chi simba mikal des tabshe matawe suni tetaro se shi.
So I think in this translation imbued is used, yeah. Conjoined is one of the seen by independent is one of the words that have some, even the translators have different views on how you translate the word seen by. Deeds imbued with the philosophical view and wisdom imbued with method may be understood by way of an analogy. When a mother stricken with grief at the death of her beloved child engages in conversation and other activities with others, the feelings she expresses do not eliminate the force of her grief. Yet not every feeling she expresses is necessarily grief. Similarly, if the wisdom that knows emptiness is very strong, even though the states of mind associated with giving, making obeisance, circumambulating, or reciting are not connections of emptiness, this does not preclude your being involved in them while endowed with the potency or force of the cognition of emptiness. For instance, at the start of a meditation session, if you first generate a very strong spirit of enlightenment, this spirit of enlightenment is not manifestly there when you then enter meditative equipoise in a concentration on emptiness. Yet this does not preclude this concentration's being imbued with the potency of the spirit of enlightenment. So before one enters into meditation session, if at the beginning if one generates a very strong bodhicitta, and then you enter the meditation session, you know, meditating on whatever, then the whole meditation session is influenced by the motivation. It's imbued with the spirit of enlightenment, conjoined with the spirit of enlightenment. Similarly, if one, before we fall asleep, we regenerate a very strong thought of bodhicitta, and we fall asleep within that motivation. And even during sleep, even though the bodhicitta is not manifest, but then the entire sleep is a mind. That sleep becomes imbued or conjoined with bodhicitta.
Yeah.
Can either be virtuous or non-virtuous. It all depends on the state of mind, you know, just before falling asleep, right?
before falling asleep, if there's a very strong virtuous thought, and then if one falls asleep within that virtuous thought, then the entire sleep is imbued with that virtuous motivation. Yeah. But if it is if one falls asleep with a non-virtuous thought, then of course, then the entire sleep then becomes imbued, yeah, or conjoined with that those non-virtuous intention. Yeah. Then there's also the mistaken idea, there's a wrong concept, thinking that, you know, accumulating merit, the collection of merit, only, you know, it's only for the purpose of achieving things like resources, long lifespan, and so forth. You know. Yeah. Other than that, you know, the collection of merit does not become a cause for omniscience. Yeah. So there's this wrong idea. So. So the collection of merit can be a cause of omniscience if it is imbued with method and wisdom. So there are some statements from the sutras. However, it is very important not to misconstrue these statements, not to, yeah. For example, in the sutras, it's mentioned adhering to the six perfections, generosity, and so forth, is demonic activity. And from the Three Heaps Sutra, it says, confess each of these, descending to the level of objective existence and giving gifts, observing ethical discipline because of a belief in the supremacy of ethics, etc. The sutra requested by Brahma says, all analysis is conceptual thought, the non-conceptual is enlightenment. So do not misconstrue these statements. So the first statement from the first statement mentioned here, adhering to the six perfections, generosity and so forth, is demonic activity. this does not show in general that all forms of generosity are demonic activities, but rather generosity that is motivated by a mistaken apprehension of a self, grasping to an ego, grasping to a self. That kind of generosity is not pure, and is therefore stated to be a demonic activity.
Yeah.
So generosity that is motivated by a mistaken adherence or grasping to the two types of self, it is not pure. Yeah. And therefore, it is stated to be a demonic activity.
Yeah.
Then as for the quotation from the Three Heaps Sutra, what the sutra is saying that, you know, because of adhering or grasping or apprehending a self, then that makes the practice of generosity not pure. And therefore, that has to be confessed. So the Three Heaps Sutra is not saying that you should confess having practiced generosity.
So
this second scriptural passage means that the perfections are impure because of being motivated by this mistaken adherence to itself, yeah. And therefore you must confess them, yeah. So it's not teaching that you should not be involved in generosity and so forth. Otherwise, the mention of a descent to the level of objective existence in the phrase, descending to the level of objective existence and giving gifts, would be unnecessary. And it would instead have stated, confess the giving of gifts in general, which it does not in fact say. If every sort of virtuous conceptual thought, such as the generous attitude when thinking I shall give this thing, and the attitude of restraint when thinking I shall restrain from this wrongdoing, if all these were an apprehension of a self of objects that misconceives the three spheres, agent, object, and recipient, then it would be right and proper that everyone finding the view of selflessness of objects should completely reject virtuous conceptual thoughts, just as they reject hostility, pride, etc. And it would be quite wrong for them to purposefully cultivate those virtues.
Okay, that's it. That then a chubby chola june to gala to dangzin and jenny yung desh. Tisugan, dangzin nashin chatwish. Cheta, Tadan dangzilis, dangzin nashin quay, topa in Sadugan, dangzin the chipot of Chadukoshi. But that denzilis, civil massage. Jimbash down by the chudim then, but dangzin the jenny with them, but Jimbat chudim swan, Zekanga, tapo dangzin nashin chatwish, the dangzilis head of Chadwish. Cheta dangzin down, but
Well, it's really possible to think that, you know, sometimes, you know, so to think, you know, that, oh, you know, it's meditation and emptiness is all that is enough, you know. Because, and you know, all this giving, you know, and practicing ethics is not really important. Because even if we do give and we do practice ethics, you know, whenever we engage in them, you know, it always involves the ego. It always involves a sense of a self, apprehending of some self. You know. And if that's the case, then that basically makes that whole thing an apprehension of, almost like an apprehension of true existence, an apprehension of a self, isn't it? Yeah. And if that's the case, then it becomes, it interferes with one's achievement of enlightenment, isn't it? So since it interferes, then why do it? You know, so, you know, just go back to meditation and emptiness, isn't it? So, you know, it's possible to have that kind of thought,
yeah? Ani jimba taiji, chadu dukala, ta jimba kwarang denzin nang si chadwaishi.
When in the course of giving, there's an apprehension of a real giver, truly existent giver, then it's a truly existent thing that you're giving. Then it's a truly existent person that you're giving it to. Yeah? Then it's like when you look at it, you know, all the three are true. Then it makes this whole thing truly existent, right? What is generosity? It is the mind of giving. It is a mind of giving. Mind wanting to give, right? But you know, if you think about this, you know, how, you know, we operate in this world of true existence, yeah, then it makes, you know, this generosity, which is this mind of giving, it makes it like an apprehension of true existence, isn't it? Although, you know, people may feel in this way, but that is incorrect. The mind of giving is the mind of giving. Mind of giving is not apprehension of true existence.
So if
one thinks that the mind of giving is a true is aspiration of true existence, then what about the person on the first Bodhisattva ground, his mind realizing emptiness? Then that you should also regard that is like hostility or pride, something to be discarded, you know. So, for the person on the Bodhisattva on the first Bodhisattva ground, that Bodhisattva does not abandon the mind of giving, isn't it? Doesn't, right? In fact, strives to increase the mind of giving, isn't it? Does the Bodhisattva on the first ground give up the mind of giving? So remember, for those of you who did the special insight module, yeah, remember there was this discussion about the three ways of apprehending an object. Apprehending an object is truly existent, apprehending an object as not truly existent, and apprehending an object that is not affected by either an apprehension of it being truly existent or apprehending it as not truly existent. So you need to have some understanding of these three modes of apprehension. So the point is that for a person who has not realized emptiness, you know, for a person who has not realized emptiness, you know, it doesn't mean that his mind is always apprehending things as truly existent. Even for someone who has not realized emptiness, it doesn't mean that every single mind in that person's continuum apprehends, you know, its respective object as truly existent. No. Okay. Hard to imagine that. Anyway.
Stop here. Yeah.
Last time, the previous module, like, was more or something. Next slide.
Excuse me, can I ask two very, very basic questions? Because I'm very new to all these concepts. For instance, perfection of generosity as against generosity. What is the differences between the words? I mean, basically, what is the meaning of the word perfection? Does it mean that it imbues with, if I can borrow that word, imbues with bodhicitta? Somebody who has already realized bodhicitta in the continuum, and when they give something, that is called the perfection.
So when does giving become a perfection of giving?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Is that with somebody who has already realized bodhicitta?
You're saying practicing, yeah?
Oh, anyway. Achieve and practice. That's it. 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 That's it.
So generosity is not necessarily perfection of generosity. Generosity, conjoined or imbued with bodhicitta becomes a perfection of generosity. And generosity becomes pure on the first bodhisattva ground.
Okay. All right. Can I ask the second question then? Regarding the non-abiding nirvana, it was explained just now, neither extreme of on that subject, when we were doing seven limb practice, seven branch practice to accumulate merit and wisdom, we are requesting Buddhas not to pass to Parinirvana. Is that something redundant? Something that is...
You don't die anyway, right?
Is that something that is cultivating our attitude rather than is a necessary, a necessity, because they won't.
Yeah, we have answer. Sanjay kun yangale dekha maris. Ani yangale bidhe sota po marwas ta chotir.
The Buddhas don't mati anyway, right? so then why is there a need to request please remain, So that's the vision.
Training of our attitude, yeah. That means it's a training of our mental attitude.
So I think we have to think about this, yeah. The Buddha's, we talk about the Buddha's embodiment of form and embodiment of truth. Form body and truth body, yeah. Right? So the truth body is divided into the nature truth body and the wisdom truth body, right? Then you have the form body, it is divided into the complete enjoyment body and the emanation body. So the complete enjoyment body remains until the end of cyclic existence. So therefore, you don't have to request, make request to that. The supreme emanation body displays the deed of passing away into Parinirvana. So therefore, there's a need to request to not show the deed of passing away into Parinirvana.
Thank you. Thank you.
So I mean, of course, there are many new concepts, words here. So you just have to work at it, I mean, it's not something that you can just realize or understand immediately. So everybody have to work at it and just pay attention to them. So Bunking, you know, you notice that she's always asking questions. It's very good, you know. It's a sign of thinking, sign of learning. Yeah. So you know, everybody should try to do this. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, you should pray after class.